Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
If thriller writers wrote history textbooks, I would have paid a lot more attention in high school. And while this is not a textbook, The Lincoln Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill America's 16th President and Why It Failed is the latest offering from New York Times bestselling authors Brad Meltzer and Josh Mensch. And Brad Meltzer joins me now. Brad, this book is full of interesting characters. It takes place just before Lincoln's inauguration in 1860, 1861. Some of the famous characters in here were previously unknown to me. One of the unknowns was Cipriano Ferrandini. Who was he?
Yeah, so we all know, let's just, you know, paint the picture for a moment, but Cipriano Ferrandini was responsible, well, let me say it like this. We all know the story of John Wilkes Booth ending Abraham Lincoln's career and his presidency. This is the story of the first secret plot to kill Abraham Lincoln at the very start, and Cipriano Ferrandini was a member of the Secret Society and the leader of the Secret Society who was trying to kill Abraham Lincoln. And I was obsessed with the story because he was a barber of all things, worked out of a fancy hotel in the basement of a Baltimore barbershop. And why Baltimore? Because when Abraham Lincoln, to be sworn in as the 16th president, he had to travel from his hometown by train, travel from his hometown in Springfield, Illinois, and go to Washington, D.C. But the only way to get there, you guessed it, you had to go through Baltimore. And Maryland at the time was a slave state. So the plot by Ferrandini was very simple. His secret society was going to kill Abraham Lincoln when he came through Baltimore before his presidency even started.
And the secret society, you talk in the book about the Knights of the Golden Circle, the Constitutional Guard. What were they made up of?
Racists. That's what they were made up of, truthfully. What they wanted was, they were a group of men who, at the time of the Civil War, the Knights of the Golden Circle wanted a true Golden Circle. They wanted an area of the southern tip of the United States, the Caribbean, and parts of Mexico, draw a big circle around it. They wanted a place where slavery could thrive forever. They saw anyone who was black as inferior to anyone who was white, and they saw Abraham Lincoln, as a result, as public enemy number one, because they were worried he was going to do away with slavery. So, for me, what was amazing is, why do we not know this story? There's a secret society. Where did it kill Lincoln? And why do we know the story? This was one of the biggest stories of the day. But really what wound up happening is the Civil War broke out. And then 4 years later, Abraham Lincoln took a bullet to the head. And when that happened, this real-life story to kill Abraham Lincoln at the start of his presidency became a footnote. But not to me. It became the basis for our book, The Lincoln Conspiracy.
This book is told basically from three different perspectives. There's the Lincoln inauguration party coming to Washington. There's the Secret Society folks in Baltimore. And then there is the Pinkerton National Detective Agency, who was most responsible for uncovering the conspiracy. How did they become involved originally, though?
Yeah, they were brought on by one of the barons of the railroad. And I love this scene on the railroad because, you know, there's a train speeding in the middle of the night. And on this train, there are many passengers, but we're focused on three of them. One is a businessman, one is a woman, and she has an invalid brother. But none of them are who they say they are. The businessman is actually famed detective Alan Pinkerton of the Pinkerton Detective Agency. The woman is Kate Warren, America's first female private eye. And her so-called brother is not her brother. He's certainly not an invalid. That's actually Abraham Lincoln. They put him in disguise. They've given him a code name. And they whisked him off in the middle of the night to make sure the secret society doesn't kill him. It's an amazing moment. By the way, I just ruined chapter one of the Lincoln conspiracy, but I feel like that's okay. But when you have moments like that, where the Pinkertons are brought on, they're brought there to figure out what the plot is, what's going on. Are they going to kill Lincoln? Are they going to kidnap him? Are they going to just blow up the railroad? They don't know in the start, but eventually uncover that it's a plot actually murder Abraham Lincoln.
And one of the things I thought was so important is that the Pinkertons discovered that the plot was actually to kill Lincoln, and blowing up the railroad probably wasn't going to happen. They had to go to the railroad and get permission to continue this investigation, right?
Yeah, the guy who hired him was really, truthfully, not worried about Abraham Lincoln. He was worried about his railroad, worried about his tracks. They were like, you know, they thought what they were trying to do was keep Lincoln from getting to his inauguration in Washington, D.C., just by blowing up some of the tracks. When they realized it was far bigger than that, someone was still had to pay the bills. And one of my favorite scenes is that moment where they have to go to Abraham Lincoln and tell him that there's a secret plot to kill him. And Lincoln's exhausted. It's at night. They're in a hotel room. Lincoln has had a whole day of shaking hands, and he's just tired. And they say, "Sir, listen, we have a credible threat that you're going to be killed, that they're going to try and kill you. We know you have an event in Philadelphia tomorrow. We need you to miss the event. And we're going to get you out of there early and, you know, potentially save your life." And Lincoln says, "I'm not missing the event in Philadelphia." And they're like, "Why?" And here's what Lincoln didn't want to miss the next day. In Philadelphia, that next day, they were honoring the birthday of one of Abraham Lincoln's heroes, a man named George Washington. And no way was Abraham Lincoln missing George Washington. So God bless Josh Mensch, my co-writer on the book. He found and was able to track down the actual speech that Lincoln gives that day. He does go to Philadelphia. He does risk his life there. And he's there at Independence Hall talking about the Declaration of Independence, how everyone should have an equal chance in America. And he then says, "If we can't save the country without giving up that principle," and Abraham Lincoln pauses, and he says, "I was about to say that I would rather be assassinated on this spot than surrender." And I love the fact that we know right there, when you read the book, that Abraham Lincoln knew there was a secret plot to kill him. And I love even more that soon after that, they sneak him out of Philadelphia. I won't tell you how they get him out of there, because it's such a fun scene to read. But that's the moment where they potentially save his life.
One of the things I also liked is how the Pinkertons went to Baltimore. What was really their plan to get there and sort of infiltrate the system? I mean, we're talking cloak and dagger, fake identities, all that stuff.
Yeah, you know, one of Alan Pinkerton, his real strength was he would infiltrate. And, you know, he was the guy, just to tell you who he is, he was in Chicago. He thought the Chicago cops were a little corrupt, so he hung out his own sign to fight crime. He wanted to be a private eye. Put a big sign with a big eyeball on it that said, "We never sleep." That eyeball is apparently where we get the term private eye from, that eye. And all thanks to the Pinkerton Detective Agency. So, but his strength was to infiltrate. He was like a termite. You know, termites come in and they eat the foundation and then the whole building crumbles. So Pinkerton would take all of his agents and slowly put them into place, meeting members of the secret society, meeting them in bars, meeting their wives, meeting everyone. And he had an incredible array of detectives to choose from. There was a 26-year-old woman who walked into his office one day and said, "I want to be a private detective." Now, of course, this is a time where no one is hiring a female investigator, much less a female private eye. But Kate Warren, the 26-year-old woman who walks in that day, says to him, "Listen, men brag to me. They say things in front of me that they wouldn't say in front of you." And God bless Alan Pinkerton, he realizes that she's absolutely right. People are going to say very different things to her than they're going to say to him. So Kate Warren becomes one of the women who he puts on the Abraham Lincoln case. She's the one who gives him his secret identity, gives him truly his fake name, and his fake tickets, and even makes a disguise for him. And I love the fact that, you know, she again becomes a footnote to history, but not to me.
I'm chatting with Brad Meltzer, who, along with co-author Josh Mensch, is out with the new book, The Lincoln Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill America's 16th President and Why It Failed. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold, and I tell you, it was a thriller to read. You know, Brad, one of the things that also stood out for me is, and it was a question in my mind until you addressed it in the book, if a private detective agency doing this, I know there was no Secret Service at the time, why not call the local Baltimore police and say, "Hey, the president's coming through there. There's a plot to kill him. We need help."
Very fair question. The problem is Maryland was a slave state, and the Baltimore police were in on the plot. In fact, one of the things, the way the plot was actually going to work is, you know, today we can take an Amtrak and we can go, you know, from Michigan, we can go down to, you know, all the way to New York and go all the way down to Florida. You know, you stay on Amtrak and, you know, that's you know, you may have to switch trains, but you never, you know, that's the way it goes. You can stay on Amtrak. Back then, you had to switch trains, you had to switch railroads, you had to move around because it wasn't one train system. So no matter what, when you got to Baltimore, you had to get out of the train, get out of the train station, you had to walk a mile, or you take a horse-drawn carriage, a full mile, before you got to the next train station that would then take you to D.C., That mile walk, when Abraham Lincoln got to Baltimore and then had to do that mile walk, that was the kill zone. And the Baltimore police were in on it. And Alan Pinkerton knew it. So he knew going to the police was never going to be helpful to him. He knew that they were parts of the Knights of the Golden Circle, part of the Constitutional Guard. And the goal was, is when Lincoln got there, the police were going to turn the other way. That was the plan. So having Alan Pinkerton and his crew there wound up being the key difference.
As you researched this book, you and Josh, what kind of research was available from the Pinkerton archives?
You know, God bless Alan Pinkerton for being a meticulous note taker. So his diaries were there. Warren's diaries were there. So many of his of the fellow detectives kept contemporaneous notes. And that's, you know, this was a time when no one knew that you were going to be anyone was going to be reading these notes, 100 years later. But thankful for us, we got to read them. And that was really, really key because, having, you know, it's one thing to read a newspaper account. It's another to read the firsthand account of someone who was there, and especially someone who had no idea that anything was going to be preserved for the ages. So it wound up just giving us an insight. And for us, you know, the other key thing was the time period. It's very titillating for me to come on and say, hey, we found the secret plot to kill Abraham Lincoln. Everyone read the Lincoln Conspiracy. That's great. But Josh and I, when we were talking about doing this book, the reason we wanted to do it was that time period of the Civil War. Because this is a time where America is split in two. It's a time in the Civil War where whatever side you're on, you hate the other side. You think the other side are horrible, awful people. Does that sound familiar to you? That's exactly where we are right now, and we need to do better, and we need to see what great leaders like Abraham Lincoln do in that situation. Abraham Lincoln, faced with that moment, doesn't divide us further. He works to unite us. That's what great leaders do.
To kind of pull this back a little bit, you write in the book that for Abraham Lincoln, the specter of death is always near. How so?
Yeah, you know, Abraham Lincoln sadly, you know, buried his mother, buried his sister, a brother, I believe, and two sons. He, in fact, was so surrounded by death that he had a vision of his own death. He had a dream where he had a vision that he was going to die during his first term in office. And he was absolutely wrong about the date and the timing, but he was absolutely right about the ending. And, you know, what I really appreciate, we all know Abraham Lincoln at the end of his story. We know the Emancipation Proclamation and what happens in freeing the slaves. We know that we win the Civil War. It's a great ending for an amazing man. What I find more interesting, though, is we all know that story. What's more interesting to me is this is the story of Abraham Lincoln at the beginning of his presidency, unsure of himself, trying to figure it out. When he finds out he gets the nomination for the presidency, you know what he's doing? He's in an alleyway playing handball. And I love that we get to see Abraham Lincoln. He's so disorganized that they lose the inaugural address. And it's, you know, we make a mistake in this country. We build these giant monuments to amazing heroes, and then we worship at their feet. But the mistake we make is we do our heroes a huge disservice when we do that, because we forget that they're human beings. We forget they're just like us. And when you see Abraham Lincoln going through these moments and making these mistakes, you realize that he, like all of us, we're all scared and we're all brave. And we're all terrified and we're all amazing. Some of us all within the same few days, some of us all within the same few minutes. And that's not bad. That's what makes us human. So I love that you get to have that, you know, when you read the book, that you really get to see Abraham Lincoln be a human being again.
Well, I know during this crazy pandemic you can't do a tour. You're doing virtual events that are listed on your website, bradmeltzer.com, right?
Yes, we're doing, we can actually see me tonight. They're beaming me to different JCCs in Atlanta and Dallas, Miami, though it's open anywhere in the country. On Thursday, we're doing an event. They beam me to the National Archives. And on Friday night, they're beaming me through St. Louis and closer to you. But all the events, you can sign up. You can, you know, they have signed book plates. You can get signed copies of the book. And you can see me talk and you can ask questions about the book. So, yeah, go to bradmeltzer.com. You'll see the virtual tour we're doing. And I love how many people are coming in and showing up and buying Father's Day presents and all the other fun stuff we're doing.
All right, the book is The Lincoln Conspiracy. He's Brad Meltzer. Brad, just another fantastic book offering from you, and thanks for joining me again to talk about it.
Always great to be back. Thanks so much, my friend, and thanks for the support in every medium, whatever we do.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.